Your dreams, ambitions, and priorities are what make you unique. With Associated Bank Private Wealth, we've got you. Our personalized approach to wealth planning puts your goals at the center of your plan. Visit associatedbank.com/privatewealth. Member FDIC.
Jake Braun is portfolio manager in the Wealth Management and Institutional Services Division at Associated Bank. Jake, thanks so much for coming on with us this week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate a quarter of a percentage point at the end of October. That was a second interest rate cut this year. And Jake, was this some kind of effort to kickstart the labor market?
Yeah, I think that's... It's fair to say, I don't know, not so much kickstart, but you know what the Fed is constantly trying to do is balance, yes, supporting the labor market, cutting interest rates tends to be supportive to economic growth and lending, which, you know, when companies want to expand, having lower interest rates makes that more attractive. And when you want to expand, you want to hire people. It's a very future oriented, but at the same time, they need to keep inflation in check. And that's where higher interest rates oftentimes by slowing things down, that's the central dilemma that they face. And, you go back to 2022 when labor market was great, exceptional, maybe the best ever. We were adding an incredible number of jobs every month, but inflation was, we reached 9% in the summer of 2022. And the question was really like, okay, we know the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates. It's just how much. And here we stand today. And it's very difficult to know which way to go because we have an inflation rate that the Federal Reserve is targeting 2%, but has consistently been between 2.5% to 3% for over a year now. It just seems like it's stuck above target and has actually been creeping up very gradually over the last few months. And at the same time, you have a labor market that has month over month been really weakening since it peaked in that 2022 timeframe. And it took a long time to get here, but over the last couple of months, job growth has effectively stagnated. And so, yeah, I think your characterization is really right. They're worried about this inflation that's stuck above target, but once this job growth decayed to this level, I think it's fair to say they just had to move because they were at 5% or so. And long term, I think they view what they call the neutral rate, so a normal interest rate, is closer to 2 to 3%. So they're very high. The brakes are heavily on. And so by stepping down a quarter of a basis point a couple of times, I think that's really, they hope it'll help. The actual effective interest rate movements tend to take time, 12 to 18 months, to fully work their way through the economy. So I wouldn't expect a job boom on the back of any major cut, but it should help over the long term. And it also should be a signal to the market and businesses that they're trying to make things a little bit easier, like a confidence boost of where things are headed from here. But certainly they're torn between going both directions. And that's kind of been complicated, frankly, by the heavy criticism and involvement from the president and one of his recent appointees to the board.
So what does this mean about December? Should there be concern headed into the holidays about inflation and a weaker economy?
I don't think the concerns necessarily change from where they are today. As I just said, you have a fairly stagnating job growth. You have inflation running above target. We're in a little bit of a weird spot because a lot of the reports that we and the Federal Reserve rely on to get a gauge of inflation and jobs come from federal agencies that were shut down during the entire government shutdown. And so we were getting by without much information. And we have some good reports that we can lean on for jobs, but there's really no good replacement for knowing where the inflation rate is at when the government's shut down. And so we expect updated reports probably next week as the government gets back and collects the data and publishes those. And I think next week we'll get a real sense of whether things are worsening or staying the same. You always get some seasonal spike in employment from, the holiday rush in retail, but we net those out because that's a reliable seasonal adjustment. So, through it all, we can also look at how companies are doing as a bit of a proxy. And companies have been reporting exceptional earnings growth, and you don't get exceptional earnings and profit growth unless people are buying goods and services. And although there isn't a lot of job growth per se, we're still at a very low unemployment rate. So, yeah, I would say things are getting better, but where they're kind of stuck at is, frankly, a good level of employment, good wage growth, and a slightly above target inflation rate. I would expect that to really just be the case the remaining case. And that's why when you look at, you know, what the market is pricing in, what the odds are for December, it's very split. There's just a lot of uncertainty because there's no clear signal which way the Federal Reserve should go.
I guess people are buying stuff. I guess the question is, can they afford to buy the stuff? That's always a question. Credit card debt's going up, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always go back. I think it's a scar from 2008, right? A financial crisis that was incurred by too much debt. But, you know, when we go back and we look at individuals and companies, we don't see an alarming amount of debt. Of course, it'll always go up over time because the economy grows and the number value will go up. But when we look at how much debt as a percentage of people's income and debt as a percentage of company balance sheets are we seeing, I wouldn't say it's like alarming. It looks like a fairly normal level. But the fact is a lot of the growth in spending is being driven by the more wealthy among us. And that you might have heard this term, a K-shaped economy, where some people are going up, some people are going down. But, you know, so it's a bit unbalanced. But for those that have the means to continue purchasing, they are. And it's as a whole is really continuing to push the economy towards growth.
All right. Well, last week, Fed Governor Steven Mnuchin suggested that interest rates could be pushed lower due to rising demand for dollar-dominated stablecoins. First, can you explain that stablecoin to me? And then maybe we can get into a little bit about what he thinks.
Yes, I'd be happy to. You know, this is related to the rise of cryptocurrency. And I know that the story has come and gone in terms of significance. But stablecoins are, I would say, maybe the most real aspect in terms of its importance and its prevalence. So what a stablecoin is it's a digital currency that you buy. And when you own it, you can transfer it to anyone else that is set up to receive it. So it really is just meant to be a form of payment. As you said, it's dollar denominated. So it's very important to understand what's backing these. When you go and you buy a stablecoin, and by the way, banks and non-banks can issue these, and these are very tightly regulated, especially with the passage this summer of the Genius Act from Congress. It really outlined a lot of the regulations to, you know, which is good. If you're going to have people using billions of dollars on a payment platform, you want to make sure that the rules are set and that they're safe. But the promise of a stablecoin is that, one, it's stable. It maintains a consistent value that you can transfer it quickly and safely. But, yeah, ultimately, it's really just meant to be a way to transfer value to another person. But the important thing is that a part of that regulation mandated that for every dollar a stablecoin issuer kind of issues in their coins, they have to have 100% of that backed by highly secure and safe assets. So if you buy $1 million worth of stable coins, that $1 million has to go into very secure, short-term, high-quality assets so that when you come back and say, hey, I'm done with this, I want to sell out of my $1 million of stable coins, the person who gave it to you can just go sell those $1 million worth of assets and give you your money back. So 100% backed, it's, I think, the safest way to do it. And that has really important implications for, as you mentioned, what Moran is talking about and how that affects inflation rates. But yeah, that's what it is. It's a digital currency. It's fully backed. It's U.S. dollar assets, and it's meant to be a way to transfer value.
So how is that going to play into interest rates then?
It gets a little in the weeds, but I'm going to try to, you know, keep this, you know, pretty straightforward. So as I said, when you give a stablecoin issuer money, they have to invest it in very certain high-quality secure assets. Those assets include treasuries, but they also include just physical cash. So they could just keep cash in a vault. They can put that money in a demand deposit, like a savings or checking account at a bank. They can put it directly with the Federal Reserve. And there's a few other places it can go, but you can imagine the market right now is $250 billion. That's how much stablecoin exists. And so that means there's $250 billion worth of reserve assets backing those. And there is a rule that you have to disclose what you're putting money into. So we know about half of that money, $125 billion, is going directly into treasuries. Now, what Stephen Moran is saying is this market has been growing substantially. And as more people pile money into this, a lot more of the money that buys stablecoins will go directly into the treasury market. As that demand for treasuries goes up, it should put a downward force on interest rates. Now, the treasuries you can buy with these, by the way, they have to be at most 90 days until maturity. So we're talking very short-term interest rates. So, you know, and let's say a couple of years from now, there's $1 trillion in stable coins, and half of that is in short-term treasuries. That could be a meaningful force in keeping interest rates down because there's so much more demand. The question, though, is where is the money coming from, right? If you want to buy a stable coin, it has to come from somewhere. So if you're selling a treasury you own to buy a stable coin, well, then you're selling $1 worth of treasuries to buy $1 of stable coin, and only half of that is going back into the treasury market. So, but if you're maybe more likely using $1 in your bank account and putting $1 into a stable coin, on a net basis, that's probably more demand for treasuries. And so this is the kind of question is, where is the money coming from to buy stable coins? If we assume that half of all that money goes back into treasuries, is it coming from people selling treasuries? Is it coming from people's bank accounts? And so just kind of figuring out where the distribution of funds ends up is really the implication for any effect on interest rates. I will just say one thing, though. I think this is putting the cart before the horse. $250 billion sounds like a lot. That's the market value of stablecoins. But when you actually look at the short-term treasury market, so treasuries maturing within 1 year, that's worth $6 trillion. So before I would really feel confident that any scenario would result in material effects on interest rates, I think this market has to grow probably multiple times over. But that's really what Steve Moran is talking about is that, you know, as more money flows into stable coins, it'll eventually then flow into treasuries, and that will bring interest rates down. And therefore, the Federal Reserve should lower interest rates to meet that new, quote unquote, normal interest rate from the extra demand for treasuries.
Something that we've been talking about in the newsroom all week long was this idea from President Trump that Americans could get $2,000 in dividends from tariff revenue. We didn't get a lot of details about what that would look like. Are these tax breaks? Are we getting checks cut to us? There's no proposal at this point to the Senate. How are you looking at this? What do you think he's trying to get at?
Well, to be honest, I don't put a lot of stock in it, partly because immediately other administration officials came out and said that this is, you know, there's nothing official here. We're not officially sending any real proposals to Congress and the Senate, which you would need to do in this case. And there was nothing coming out of Senate or House Republicans that really gave much credence to this as well. I would also add this, what happened, I believe it was Saturday before the shutdown was over and an agreement had been made. And, you know, one of the key issues for Democrats for pushing, you know, for continuing with the shutdown was a continuation of the ACA premium subsidies. And so this to me strikes me more as just one of those political jabs that the president would throw out there. You know, it's like, hey, I have a better idea than you on this issue you're fighting for. And so because it didn't really seem like there was any real proposal or anyone else in the administration or Congress taking it seriously, I don't give it a lot of weight. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it actually is a proposal down the road that becomes real. But in that case, then I think it's very important to talk numbers. And if you look at, because in a couple of his messages, he tied it to, look how much money we're raising with tariffs. And again, there wasn't a solid definitive proposal, but he kicked out $2,000 per person except for rich people. So let's say he gives $2,000 to every American except for the top 10% of income earners. That's about $600 billion. This year, tariff revenue has brought in $250 billion. So you're talking a $350 billion shortfall for a proposal. On top of that, there's no guarantee that that tariff revenue money is likely to remain. Right now, there is a court case in front of the Supreme Court that is explicitly challenging a lot of the justification and the power that President Trump used to raise much of his tariff revenue. And frankly, the early reading is that it seems likely, perhaps a good chance, that the Supreme Court will rule against him, that the emergency economic powers that justified about half of the tariffs that he put in place were illegally done. If that comes to pass, then that money would likely have to be refunded, and it would no longer be revenue for the government. So again, I don't take this very seriously because of the context it was set in and the lack of support from Congress. And I think that this is there's other things to worry about, especially with the tariff revenue for the president right now.
Sure. Jake, how can people reach out and find out more information, what you're working on?
Yeah, email me directly, jacob.braun@associatedbank.com, or give me a call at 414-278-1864.
Jake Braun, Portfolio Manager in Wealth Management and Institutional Services Division of Associated Bank. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.